What's up? It is me, George G. Got another awesome episode of the Aligned Money Show coming your way featuring Kyle George. Kyle is a CFP and a wealth advisor with Johnson Financial Group. We had a great conversation. It started out with two truths and a lie. We talked about the challenges and opportunities of couples understanding money on their own and then coming together and getting on the same page with their finances. We talked about how much goes into, or rather, the power that money has, particularly if we're not paying close attention, and how to get a handle on it. We talked about a helpful checklist for making sure that you're doing everything that needs to be done when it comes to money. We talked about thinking about retirement in the right way and making sure that we're retiring to something and not from it. And then we closed with an awesome difference-making tip. I know you are going to love it. Let's go. Kyle, to get us started, give me two truths and a lie, please.
Two truths and a lie. Okay. Well, I'm from Illinois, so I'm a Chicago Bears fan. Say I regularly play piano and I've read C.S. Lewis.
Oh, my goodness. You are a Bears fan, you play the piano, and you've read C.S. Lewis. Those are all very good, Kyle. I'm going to guess that you've never read C.S. Lewis.
Ooh, that was a truth.
Ah, you got me. You got me.
Oh, man.
Which one is the lie?
Well, I'm actually a longtime Packers fan, even though I'm from Illinois originally. I grew up about 5 minutes south of the border, and about, you know, 51% of any fans are, you know, in a bar or something are Bears fans. 48% are Packers fans. And then there's like one guy in the corner who's like a Lions fan or a Vikings fan. So that's pretty typical.
Yeah, that is how that goes. So you are a piano player. And do you love C.S. Lewis? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I do. I'm taking piano classes. I wouldn't say that I'm a piano player, but I do regularly play piano. So, you know, I can play the entertainer, maybe a very rustic entertainer. And yeah, I've read C.S. Lewis for a long time. One of my majors in college was philosophy. And you know, Lion, Witch, Wardrobe, people love those books and they're wonderful books, but I also really enjoyed reading some of his other writings. He's a beautiful writer, and just highly recommend reading it for folks who are interested in learning a little bit more about life and morality and things of that nature. Like, yeah. Topic conversation.
He's a, I don't think it's fair to say he's underrated, but his scope of work is really incredible.
Absolutely.
And so piano, Kyle, that's always something I point to, that I've got a running list of stuff that I really like to be able to do, but there's no way I'll ever actually put in the time to do it. And learning piano was on there. So how did you, what motivated you to actually do it?
Well, I have the benefit of having been a band geek when I was growing up. And so I do know how to read music. I wouldn't say I could read music well today, but I did in school through college. And then, you know, something I wanted to return back to. I wanted to make something beautiful, or at least occasionally beautiful. Yeah. In the world. And so, you know, that was kind of the impetus, just to have a creative outlet. And my goal now is to have a couple of very tepidly performed Christmas songs ready to go for our little family gathering that we have every year.
I think that is outstanding. I love everything about that. Perfect. Well, what's top of mind for you right now, Kyle?
Yeah, what's top of mind for me is, you know, as a financial planner, and also as a more recently married financial planner, we actually just celebrated, my wife and I, we celebrated our 3-year anniversary yesterday, incidentally. And we've been together.
Congratulations.
For some time. Thank you so much. And one of the key considerations or factors that a financial planner helps clients with is this huge life event, retirement, right? And there's so many things bound up in it. And of course, there, you know, I think it's well-treaded terrain that, you know, advisors may not spend enough time talking with clients about softer skill sets or helping them to paint a vision, right? You know, we may, and I'm guilty of this too, spending a lot of time talking about projections and forecasts and returns and, you know, rates and inflation and things of this nature. But I've tried to orient myself more as I become a more experienced advisor to trying to paint that picture. And really, I'm a curious person naturally, and I want to bring that to life for people. And I'm excited about what's next for them. And at some point over the last year or two, I've realized that, you know, sometimes when you're meeting with a couple, you know, there may be kind of moments where they may not have ironed out what that vision is. And that's okay, right? I would not expect anyone to come prepared with all of those answers and to kind of have a perfect ironclad view of what their next life stage is going to look like. But in a lot of cases, I've come to realize that it's so important to not only be comfortable with yourself and what your own vision is, but then just to have those conversations with your spouse and to do it well ahead of time, right? To talk about the trajectory of how you're growing, because ideally, you know, you'd like to try to both be a good collaborator today, but then also grow together.
I think it's such an important thing that's definitely not talked about enough. It's hard enough just as an individual, to your point, to kind of get a sense of what do I want? Well, I want to have a good day and I want to eat something and then I'm probably going to watch TV. Now, what do you want for your future? And then all of a sudden now we're married and now we're supposed to be able to have that conversation together. It's not obvious at all to me.
Right. Absolutely.
And it's also, when you think about it, it's like, oh yeah, that's obvious that we'd want to do that. But just because something is obvious that we ought to do it doesn't mean that I then know how to do it, or even sort of what's that first step? Because that's, for lack of a better term, a big conversation.
It's also just that there's just so much bound up in this life event that it's so easy to forget about the various things you may want to be thinking about. And it's not intentional. It's not, you know, it's a perfectly honest, you know, consideration that you may just not have given enough consideration to, you know, and in some sense, maybe you have, created some assumptions in your mind about what this other person, the person in your life may want for themselves and for you. And if you're not engaged in an ongoing conversation, with your spouse, you know, there may be, opportunities for miscommunication and, a misalignment of expectations. It's so, top of mind right now. It's very interesting. The New York Times actually just had an article about this, a write-up about this very topic. And they, you know, a wonderful, wonderful writer. It was a wonderful article, you know, spend a lot of time talking, of course, less about the financial planning aspect of that event, and much more about, you know, what each couple or each spouse envisioned for themselves and how it was different and how that created some tension.
It'd be weird if you wrote down what you want your retirement to be like, and then your wife wrote it down and they were exactly the same. That would be just preposterous. It's clearly they're going to be different. And if we don't address that, then we're not going to get what we want.
That's what we call an open book test, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've sat down with your spouse and you've said, hey, what do you put number three here in your priority list of, yeah, estate planning is really valuable to me. I typically, as a best practice, particularly with younger couples, and I guess when I say younger, I mean, it could run the gamut, but let's just say mid-30s to mid-40s or something, you know, they're squarely in the accumulation stage, but they are preparing for retirement, even though it's not as a perhaps robust of a conversation as you might have 5 to 10 years from retirement. And in so many cases, when I suggest to them that they take like a checklist of priorities and fill it out separately and then kind of come together, how different that is. It's quite wild.
And it does come down to that, right? I spend a lot of time thinking about priorities because not everything can be the most important thing. So we do need to sort of suss out what's most important. What's least important or less.
Absolutely. And you're a financial unit in so many ways. You're filing your taxes jointly. You're living in the same house. You may have shared children, right? Shared community involvement, shared friends, right? And in some sense, it's so easy to just think, and again, not in a, flippant way, but you may not just have thought to ask that question or really try to have those conversations about what's important to you in this, with this huge upheaval and hopefully a positive one, but nonetheless an upheaval.
What are some of those key variables or questions, items to prioritize? What are some of those things?
That's a great question. It's centered around, I think, work, family, and self. Work is of course a large one, right? It's, does a person have a passion for the career or don't they, or do they have a passion for a whole other, career or job? If a person is a cyclist, you know, maybe they'd love working like part-time at a bike shop. Well, maybe the spouse or your particular partner is not on board with that, or they want to really spend time with you, or they thought, hey, we were going to do a lot of travel. So there's often a mismatch around work, when and what does that look like? For so many folks, it doesn't simply mean I'm one day working and then the next day I'm not working, although that may be the case. You know, it may mean a whole host of things. So sometimes there are pitfalls that folks can just fall into there. Family is another huge one. So that can be bound up in relocation, for example. So if you want to be closer to, let's say, your kids who are perhaps fully grown at this juncture in your life and you're preparing for retirement, maybe you want to spend time with grandkids and your kids more, or brothers and sisters, and that you haven't connected with in some time. Your partner may find them all delightful, and yet it may not be their vision for retirement, right? I mean, it can be nuanced in that way. And then finally, from a self perspective, I think the most successful clients that I found are the folks who have something to retire to rather than something that they're retiring from. But the two is not where the conversation ends, right? It's what are those internal passions that you have, those pursuits that you've been thinking about for some time? And how does that compare to what your spouse wants? Going back to playing piano, I have a keyboard and it has headphones, and I have a very happy marriage. And I could envision a world in which somebody wants to play piano and both couples are at home. And it's like, I don't want to hear chopsticks for the 12th time poorly, you know, Kyle, please stop. The New York Times article, in fact, had a really interesting comment about, you know, living spaces. And for one spouse, they felt like their space, violated is a very strong word, but was disturbed, let's say, because their partner was there. And it's not to say they don't love their partner. They do love their partner, but their life is now much different and it's an adjustment. And have they talked about what that means for each of them?
Yeah, those are all giant things for sure. And I mean, what happens if you don't think about these things, if you don't talk about them?
Well, I think it just adds to the stress level around all of the other things that are bound up in this big event. So, you know, in many cases, you have enough to contend with trying to determine what your health insurance, some of the blocking and tackling that's associated with retirement. What is my health insurance going to look like? What is my cash flow going to look like? What's my tax liability going to look like? How ought my investments, how should it be allocated? And what's the risk level I should have as a retiree, things of that nature, right? And so then you're kind of stacking on these other concerns and issues that just kind of maybe has the potential to exacerbate and make everything just feel a little bit more uncomfortable, you know, and just feel a little less settled, right? So if you could at least have a conversation with your partner about, you know, what's important to you in retirement, then I think you've taken a tension and you've turned it into you've made your partner more of a teammate, right? Someone who can be on your side traveling together and not one way or the other feeling like there's this tide or these considerations that are working against you.
Which, you know, and that's the last thing that I'm sure that that person wanted in the article is if it's the wife who was working full time and then the husband who's staying at home, all of a sudden the wife's around all the time. They love each other, but it's just, to your point, it's not a violation. It's just, this is just a new thing. And it's changing habits and routines. And to not address that, to not be talking about these things is, strikes me as just, you're setting yourselves up for unhappiness.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One other aspect that may be worth just noting too, that I actually wrote about in an article a month or two back before this New York Times article, not nearly as articulate, but anyhow, important information nonetheless, is just determining what your financial fitness is. And when I say financial fitness, I mean your kind of expertise and also desire for expertise around financial matters, things like determining your budget, talking about investments, talking about taxes and things of that nature. Oftentimes, one spouse may not want to have anything absolutely at all to do with it. Another partner or another spouse, or, you know, may be very invested and want to learn. And in a lot of cases I've seen, or another situation is that maybe one person has handled the finances for decades, and now you're retired, and now the other person wants to have some level of involvement in those finances, and that's a new experience. And it's kind of like, hey, this is my territory. This is my division of labor. You did this and I did this and it worked well for many years and now it's changing. So that's another consideration to really think about, is just to talk about, well, who's going to kind of take this on and shoulder this burden? Is it going to be both of us? Is it going to be one or the other, the person who has done this, or is it going to be somewhat different going forward?
Is there a right answer to that?
No. No, the right answer is what's best for you. Not to be glib, but it's again the conversation about what is your desire and your appetite for wanting to be involved in those things. And many couples are, you know, perfectly happy having that division of labor go on, and maybe there's another aspect of their lives that they are more involved in, you know, that the other person can say, hey, I'm taking a step back from this because this is, you know, how we're going to operate going forward.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. When do you think that, or when do you advocate that people start having these kinds of conversations about retirement?
I think as soon as possible. The trajectory and the shape of the conversation is going to be much different, right? If you're a mid-30s to mid-50s person, you know, there's kind of the well-treaded, you know, you're in the accumulation phase from the time you have a job till, let's say, you're early to mid-50s traditionally. And then, you know, you're really thinking about retirement and you're somewhat still in the accumulation stage before retirement, but that pre-retirement phase is much different. So I would say as soon as possible, you know, maybe your primary concern should be, again, saving, like we've kind of just alluded to, or I've alluded to. And maybe those conversations are not quite as often. And then particularly, of course, as you get within 10 years, maybe even 15 years, you may want to start having those conversations on a, you know, in a more detailed way and perhaps more often.
I love it. Well, Kyle, we're ready for that difference-making tip. What do you have for us?
My difference-making tip. Okay, well, on that point, that's a very good segue. So in general, this is maybe a good rule of thumb. You know, if you thought to yourself, man, it's been a while since I've changed my clocks because of daylight savings time, then it probably has been a long enough period of time for you to have a conversation and communicate with your partner about what's important to you in retirement. I don't know what to do about those folks in Arizona if they don't change their class. Yes. No, I'm just kidding, Arizona. You do you, Greg. But I you know, or George. But I would just say, you know, think about having those conversations at least once a year. You know, check in with your partner about a whole host of things. It doesn't just have to be financial topics. It can be all sorts of things.
I think that is great stuff that definitely gets, come on. Whether or not we have daylight savings thrust upon us or not, Kyle, it is a good practice at least once or twice a year at a minimum, for goodness sakes, to be having these kinds of conversations and to check in, because everything you've been talking about makes so much sense to me. I love the framing of work, family, and self that gives people a track to run on. And I also love the language about having an open book test. We're not trying to stump anybody here. Let's get on the same page and have an open and honest conversation about what we want, and probably going to get us a lot closer to actually living it. So, well, Kyle, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage with you?
Well, George, thank you so much for having me. You can find me on LinkedIn just by searching Kyle George. You can find us on the Johnson Financial Group website. That's johnsonfinancialgroup.com. We have a very nice find an advisor kind of section where you input your zip code if you're in the state of Wisconsin. There's a whole host of very talented folks that I work with who can help with a whole litany of things, including financial planning, banking, and so on. So that's where you can find us.
Excellent. If you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Kyle your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Find him, Kyle George, on LinkedIn. I'll certainly link that in the notes. And then go to johnsonfinancialgroup.com and check out the great resources. If you happen to be in the state of Wisconsin, click on the Find an Advisor button. And but to Kyle's point, also offer lots of different financial services for whatever that you are needing. Thanks again, Kyle.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You as well. And finally, friendly reminder, it's never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are. So act accordingly.